Hey, Rip City, this is Anthony Simons, and it's time to open the briefcase with Casey Holdoff.
Greetings, Blazer fans, and welcome to The Briefcase, episode 93 of The Briefcase. I am your host, Casey Holdall, and the NBA playoffs roll on, so in this edition, we'll briefly touch on every series and give quick updates on where each one of those series is at, have a little bit of clarification about the Trailblazers at the draft lottery, particularly in terms of the tiebreakers that the NBA announced this week, and we'll hear from both Tumani Kamara and Delano Banton at their exit interviews as we get close to completing that series on this edition of The Briefcase. After recording on Monday, there were a couple fantastic finishes, so let's go ahead and just break down all the games that have happened and are going to happen as the first round of the NBA playoffs roll on. Starting off with probably the least interesting series, Cleveland Cavaliers up 2-0 on the Orlando Magic after taking Game 2, 96-86 on Monday. There were two great games on Monday. The one game that wasn't great was Cavaliers Magic. That's one of the series that just doesn't really interest me all that much. If you're a Magic fan, I completely get it. If you're a Cavs fan, I completely get it. Otherwise, not a whole lot of intrigue in that one for me. I feel like Cavs win that one fairly easily. Game 3 is scheduled for Thursday, April 25th, 4 p.m. on NBA TV. So if you get off work early on Thursday and you have NBA TV still and you're interested, there you go. But it was the two nightcap games on Monday that, as you surely know by now, were absolutely fantastic. First one, Knicks end up scoring something like 8 points in the last 11 seconds to defeat the Philadelphia 76ers 104-101 Monday night at Madison Square Garden. Game 3 scheduled for Thursday, April 25th on TNT, 4:30 start time in Philadelphia. Just a wild scramble at the end of that game. Dante DiVincenzo ends up hitting the go-ahead three-pointer to cement that game for the Knicks. Looked like the Sixers actually might even that series at 1-1. Couple turnovers, Maxey getting the ball stolen. Jalen Brunson gets a ridiculous bounce on a three-point shot. Oregonian, or at least I believe he was born in Oregon, Isaiah Hartenstein gets an offensive rebound. Dante DiVincenzo gets the ball at the top of the key, nails a three-pointer, pandemonium in New York, Knicks up 2-0. And then in the game after that, the Denver Nuggets also took a 2-0 series lead versus the Los Angeles Lakers with a 101-99 victory in Denver. Nuggets were down something like 20 points, maybe 15 points at some point in time in that game. Rally in the second half. Jamal Murray, who had not been all that good throughout the game, hits a mid-range fadeaway shot over Anthony Davis as time expires to cap the rally and give the Nuggets, I think, their 10th straight victory versus the Lakers. Game 3 of that one also scheduled for Thursday, TNT, 7 o'clock in Los Angeles. I don't think the Nuggets are going to sweep that series, but when you lose a game the way the Lakers lost Game 2, particularly after LeBron turned back the clock, looked like vintage LeBron. I mean, LeBron's been great anyways, but he looked like a man possessed, still wasn't able to get the victory. When you lose a game like that, sometimes that finishes the series for you. We'll see if that's the case in Game 3. But while Monday's games were about great finishes, Tuesday's games were really more about evening the score. You had the Timberwolves, who did take a 2-0 series lead by defeating the Suns 105-93 in Minneapolis on Tuesday. To be perfectly honest, I've been a little surprised the Suns haven't been a bit more competitive in that series. Both games so far, they looked good for maybe a half, but the Timberwolves always looked like the better team, winning both those first two games by double digits. Suns just aren't deep enough. Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal just doesn't really work as a lineup. I don't think particularly we don't have a lot of guys behind those guys. Maybe DeAndre wasn't the cause of all your problems. I don't think the Suns win this series, but even if they did, they definitely don't make the finals. And if this team, as constructed, doesn't make the finals, where do you go next? I don't know where the future is for that team if they're not going to win it this year. And it sure doesn't seem to me like they're going to win it this year. Game 3 of Suns versus Timberwolves is scheduled for Friday, 7:30 start time on ESPN. Then in the East, the Pacers even the series with the Bucks 1-1 by winning 125-108 Tuesday in Milwaukee. Pascal Siakam, 37 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, 34 points once again for Damian Lillard. Bucks not able to get the stops they needed to in that series. Obviously, you're always going to miss Giannis Antetokounmpo. They're really starting to miss him now. So now they got to go in and win one of these next two games in Indiana. If not, Bucks in a world of hurt. Another start for Game 3 on that one, Friday at 2:30 on ESPN. And then finally, you also had the Mavericks evening the series versus the Clippers with a 96-93 victory in Game 2 in Los Angeles Tuesday night. 34 points, 6 rebounds, 9 assists for Luka Doncic. You figure that the Mavs are probably going to have a bounce back after a really rough Game 1. I still think the Clippers end up winning the series, but I'll go so far as to say that whichever team wins Game 3 probably wins the series. Though, to be frank, that's probably the case in 90% of these series that are tied at 1-1. I don't know, someone's probably done the math on that, but either way, Mavericks-Clippers does feel like a bit of a coin flip. And then you have the two straggler series. The Celtics still up 1-0 on the Miami Heat. Game 2 scheduled for Wednesday. That's tonight, 4 p.m. on TNT. Same with Pelicans-Thunder. Thunder end up winning that game just barely. CJ can't get that buzzer beater to go as time expires. Game 2 also scheduled for Wednesday, 6:30 start time, also on TNT. TNT Wednesday night doubleheader. Heat, Celtics, Pelicans, Thunder. Still picking Boston to sweep that one. And kind of the same thing with the 76ers. Losing the game one, the boy, the Pelicans lost game one, particularly as hard as they had to fight to get into the postseason. Feels like they might be done unless they come out and give a great performance tonight. And in fact, I'll say if they don't win game two in Oklahoma City, I think maybe they get swept. How's that for a dumb prediction? But from the top level, I would say the first round of the NBA playoffs so far have been pretty good. Again, even the games that weren't especially close have been pretty good games. I think a lot for the league to be excited about going into the second round, which will probably start sometime in the next week, week and a half. All right, moving on to something that does pertain to the Portland Trail Blazers. The NBA broke the ties for the NBA draft lottery early this week, and the Trail Blazers lost the tiebreaker to the Charlotte Hornets, both teams with a 21-61 record. When the news came out, I had tweeted that what that meant was that the Hornets get a slightly better chance of getting a top four pick than the Trailblazers, which is true. The Charlotte Hornets now have a 13.3% chance of getting the top overall pick, while the Trailblazers have a 13.2% chance of getting the top overall pick. But there's actually something more important here. And it's that the NBA draft lottery is just for the top four picks. So what I mean for that, and you've probably heard this before, is that when they actually do the draft lottery, they're not picking every single one of those teams and saying, you're 13th, you're 12th, you're 11th, you're 10th. They're selecting for the actual top four picks, and then everything after that goes in terms of order. So what that means in terms of the tiebreaker is that if in the event that a team below Portland ends up jumping into one of those top four picks into the lottery, that means that all the teams get pushed down one spot. And why I'm mentioning this is that in that scenario, since Charlotte won the tiebreaker, they get the better spot. So, for example, say the Utah Jazz that have the 8th best odds to get the top overall pick, 6% odds to get the top pick. Let's just go ahead and say the Jazz end up hitting those 6% odds and get the number one pick. Everything else stays the same. So Detroit gets the second pick, Washington gets the third pick, Charlotte would get the fourth pick, and Portland would get the fifth pick because of that tiebreaker. If Portland had won the tiebreaker in that scenario, they get the fourth pick and Charlotte gets the fifth pick. So that's not great. Portland, basically, by way of, it's not a coin flip, it's some kind of random drawing, but because they had the same record and because they lost, they could conceivably end up with one spot worse of a pick than they would have if they had won that. Now, it's also very possible that the lottery goes completely chalk and it doesn't end up making a difference. In fact, the odds say that's the most likely scenario, but that is something to consider when thinking about that tiebreak, is that it does have more of an effect than just getting that extra ping pong ball. Now, I think you can make a pretty good argument that in this draft especially, being one spot difference doesn't make all that much of a difference. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of consensus. That might change as we get further in the pre-draft process. But if you assume that with this draft, it's going to be more about what each team needs and less about who the best player available is, being one spot back, which saves you a little bit of money, maybe not the worst thing in the world. I do still think you would probably rather have a better pick than a worse pick. But in this draft in particular, I just don't think it makes as much of a difference as it would have, say, in last year's draft. Also, I've noted multiple times the Blazers have the 33rd pick, which is the third pick of the second round in this draft. That is not the case. That pick actually goes to Milwaukee via Sacramento. And one thing that the tiebreaker did do as well is it flip-flopped, or at least it added a little bit of uncertainty into which team gets the 34th pick. Since the second round draft order is the inverse of the lottery draft order, as in, if you lose a tiebreaker, you get the better second round pick. It's also possible the Blazers end up with the 34th pick, which they got from Charlotte. I don't even know how they got it. I don't know if that's the Gary Payton trade. I don't know if that's from the Dame trade. One of the important things to remember about this too, and I've been reminding myself of this, is that all this stuff is just going to get figured out when they have the actual draft lottery. I don't even know if it's worth spending a whole lot of time trying to figure out which picks Portland has at this point. Lottery hasn't happened yet. We don't know for sure. When the lottery happens in mid-May, we'll have a better sense, not even a better sense, we'll have a concrete sense of which picks Trailblazers have. So as of right now, They have their first round pick that'll hopefully end up in the high lottery. They have the Warriors' first round pick, as long as that doesn't end up in the top four, which is very unlikely, but still a probability of that happening. And then they have, I believe, the 33rd pick in the second round and the 40th pick also in the second round. I think I got that right. That could change. If it does change, I'll be sure to let you know. Or if I need to correct myself, I will also let you know. Also, shout out to Sean Hyken. He did a lot of the legwork on this second round stuff. Subscribe to the Rose Garden Report if you haven't already. Moving on, let's go ahead and hear from Tumani Kamara, who discussed his rookie season at exit interviews last week. Tumani, one of the absolute bright spots of the season this year for the Trailblazers, arguably their best rookie this season. Really excited to see what we're going to see from Tumani going forward. It was really a bummer that his season got ended by that rib injury, but lots of great things for Tumani in his future. Over the course of the interview, Tu talks about his rookie season, having his season ended by that rib injury, which ended his goal of playing 82 games in his rookie season, the parts of his game he's looking to improve this offseason, his schedule during the offseason, including whether he's going to be at the Las Vegas Summer League, living in Portland, the competition or lack thereof of Portland's forwards, making plays with effort, and being one of the few players in the NBA out of Belgium. Always like hearing what Tumani has to say. Give it a listen if you haven't already. Tumani Kamara at Exit Interviews.
Just in general, how do you feel about your rookie season, particularly maybe in contrast to maybe what your expectations were going into it?
A lot of up and downs. I think one of the things I like the most about the game of basketball is winning games. So it was a really tough year, but I feel like I was able to learn so much. Being able to be on the court as a rookie, which I didn't expect. So just being able to being like a sponge and try to get better every game and every day. And just keep on learning, I think.
What does it mean to you that you were able to make such a large impact in your first year?
It's basketball, so I feel like I kind of get blinded by that, and just in a way, it's like I try to get on the court and try to help my team as much as I can. But yeah, looking back at it and looking at what I was able to do, I think it's something that I never expected, especially not knowing if I was going to get drafted and anything. I don't know how the process was going to happen, so just very grateful to be able to have an impact on the team, be able to help a program, and be able to learn so much as a player too. I think it was an amazing year for me as a growing aspect, yeah.
How disappointing was it for you, just kind of the final couple weeks of the season when they were giving all the younger guys kind of a lot of extended run that you had that injury and you weren't able to be out there with them?
I mean, it's hard. It's hard, especially because one of my goals was to be able to play 82 games. I missed 3 games before my injury, but I was just trying to play as much as I can because I loved the game so much and I knew I was going to have more opportunity towards the end of the year. But it's life works in mysterious ways. So everything happens for a reason. I'm just grateful that I'm in the NBA, and I know my injury is not too bad. So I know I'll be able to be back by next year and be at a good spot.
What's the timeline with it? Like, when are you gonna be fully clear?
It's more like a feeling thing, It's ribs and stuff like that. So it's really how you feel. How can you be? I mean, right now there's probably like a couple of weeks where I can't do anything. But just trying to ramp it up from then. And then, yeah, it's just about how much can I control the pain.
Why was one of your goals to play 82 games?
Just because I'm a competitor. And I just love being on the court. And I hate sitting on the sideline and having to watch my teammates and my boys play. Go on the court and have to go like 100% when I can't participate. So I think it's very important for me to be able to give 100% and participate to as much as I can.
What are maybe some of the things you're going to look to improve this offseason?
I think my shooting, finishing, and ball handling are probably the main 3 things that I want to improve. And then keep on working on all the aspects with this, my physical abilities, or also my defense, also read the screens better, watch more film, and yeah, just keep on getting better every day.
Do you have an idea yet of what your schedule is going to look like? Are you going to be here? Are you going to Florida? Are you going to Europe? Like, did you know kind of how that's going to play out at least?
It's really hard to kind of plan that right now, especially with the injury. So it's probably going to be a lot of change, but the main 2 places I'll be is probably Portland and Miami. I'll try to go back and forth from there, see how it goes, and then see how much I can do by next month. So we'll see.
If you're able to with the injury, do you want to play Summer League again?
Whatever they want me to do, I'm still a first year. I haven't played an 82 game yet, so I wouldn't be considered as a second year yet. But it's just being able to to just do whatever they want me to do, and just create that connection and build that trust and that respect between us. And then, yes, if they want me to play, I'll play, you know.
How important was it for you to kind of embrace the city too? Obviously, the team gave you the Maurice Lucas Award. I mean, how much did you want, you know, to embrace the city, you know, your first NBA city?
It means a lot. Like I said, I wasn't ready for this. I mean, I didn't know if I was going to get drafted or if I was going to be in a situation where I was going to be able to play. So being able to have that support and all that work that I've been putting, being able to have that work being recognized, I think means a lot to me. And I mean, I can't complain. I feel like I'm in a great place. My whole family, my whole, my partner, everybody's feeling good here in Portland. And I'm feeling good here in Portland, and I'm just glad that I'm able to play and be able to participate and help the team win. So,
there's a lot of young forwards on this team. What was that competition like between you guys?
It's funny because I didn't feel any competition. I think it was more a lot of respect between each and every one of us. And I think it's just motivation, try to do, knowing that you control what you can control. And if you're not playing, there's something that you could do better. If you are playing, that means there's something that you do good. And then just be able to understand that. I think we're not trying to, we're competing, of course, on and off the court. But it's not a toxic competition, if I would say. It's really friendly and really respectful.
Kind of in that vein, you come into the season and you come off the bench, you end up getting a starting spot, you end up losing it, then you get back again. Kind of, what was it like in terms of just that process of playing and then not playing as much and then getting back in the lineup? Like, how did that feel from from the perspective of, you know, your first season, you're trying to figure things out?
Well, it was really hard, I think, for everybody, especially with the number of injuries that we had and the number of changes that we had to make almost every game. But like I said, I think I was getting lost in a little bit, and I'm still a first year, so I'm a competitor. So of course I want to be on the court as much as I can, but I need to remember how much I have to learn still. And that it was my first year in the league, so I can't expect too much out of that. But it was a great year. It was a great year for me personally, being able to get on the court and be able to learn.
You talked about the road trip where things kind of went sideways in New York. And the team kind of had a meeting and kind of reset some expectations, kind of what Casey was talking about for you. What did you kind of figure out from that point until now, and then kind of going into next year, not only kind of where you are on this team, but where your role is in the NBA and expectations of you kind of going forward for your career?
I think right now who I am is a defense first person. I'm trying to still find myself as an offensive guy. I feel like throughout my whole career in college, I've been a 4-5 man. So it's my first year playing on the wing and be able to put the ball on the ground a little bit more and not playing back to the basket. So it's a lot to learn, a lot of new habits that I have to have. But I think my role gonna keep on growing, depending on how much work I put in, into my role, who I want to become. I think my shooting is going to get better. I think my ball handling is going to get better. So I don't want to put any limit on myself, but I think that's who I am right now.
How'd you enjoy earning that reputation of someone that brings toughness to the team but also a defensive stopper?
I love it. I love it. That's all I'm about. I'm all about effort and try to make winning plays and try to help the team. If the team need me to score, if the team need me to guard the toughest player, I think that I'm willing to do it. And like I said, I don't want to put that limit to myself. I think I have a lot more things to prove. But yeah, it's just very humbling and exciting that people can see that through me.
Tumani, when we were in Boston, you weren't even playing. But there was Belgian media there asking about you and your season. What's that been like to have, you know, not even just support, but just interest from your home country as a guy who, you know, is one of the few players that's ever made it to the NBA from there?
It's been crazy. It's been amazing. It's not a reaction that I was expecting, especially because basketball is not really a big sport back home. I know they go crazy for soccer and all that other stuff, but I didn't expect the fans and the community to go as hard as they did for basketball. So, like I said, it's very humbling. And it's a dream of mine that I always wanted to do, be able to represent my country and my family. So, just very grateful for the opportunity and be here today.
Is there a Tumani Kamara returns to Belgium tour that's going to happen or something?
I have two basketball camps for the kids in July. So I will go there in July and try to spend time with the kids in the community, and at the same time try to spend some time with my family. So we'll see.
So there you go. Just the beginning for Tumani Kamara. Also, please know that I am angling to try to get to Belgium this summer to cover one of those camps. I haven't been to Europe since one of my first seasons with the team, when I went and did stories about Nicolas Batum, Rudy Fernandez, and Sergio Rodriguez. Didn't make it to Belgium on that trip, though. Would like to check out Tumani in Belgium. Let's make it happen, folks. All right, now let's get to Delano Banton's exit interview. Delano talks about his first few months with the Trailblazers, the culture the Trailblazers are trying to instill here in Portland under Chauncey Billups, his thoughts on Scoot Henderson, and the importance of young players getting an opportunity. Blazers got Delano Banton at the trade deadline from Boston, had a very nice stretch with the Portland Trailblazers, has a team option going into next season. A lot of people assume the Blazers will pick that up. I would assume the same as well, but I've also learned that it's a little hard to tell sometimes with those things. Either way, I think Delano Banton proved that he's a guy who deserves more minutes or is ready for more minutes in the NBA. Is he going to get as many minutes and as many opportunities as he got in Portland in the second half of the season somewhere else, or even in Portland next season? Probably not. But I think Delano did show that he is an absolute player in this league, a guy who can come off your bench, give you some nice minutes. At least he's able to hit that three-point shot consistently, as he did for the most part in Portland, other than in the last game of the season where I think he went something like 0-14 from three. Kind of blew his percentage from three in that one game, but general, nice run for Delano Banton. Let's go ahead and hear what he had to say at exit interviews.
Delano, just I guess in general, how do you view your time in Portland after obviously arriving here after the trade deadline?
Man, I just want to start off, you know, I can't express, you know, how thankful I am towards the whole organization. Just accepting me with open arms, you know, from day one, coming in, putting me in position to be aggressive, making sure I have everything I needed. I feel like I never missed a beat, you know, when I came here. Obviously trying to get into the flow of things takes some time, but, you know, just treating me as, you know, one that I've been here since the beginning of the year, felt accepted. So I just want to shout out to everyone for that. Everyone here, you know, dedicated to trying to win, building towards that. Everyone's locked in, grinding, doing their job to the best they can. But we're just trying to figure it out. Grinding this off season. It's going to be a good off season. But yeah, man, I had a great time for the half the season I was here. Put me in position to be aggressive, show what I can do in this league. And, you know, like I told Joe, I told Chauncey, man, I'm just very, very thankful. They gave me the opportunity to feel like, you know, I was a child out there playing. Like, you know, this is what we dream of. So, I just always wanted this opportunity, but definitely just trying to piece it together and, you know, contribute to winning next year.
Delano, what was your impression when you got traded here of, like, the culture that they're trying to build here? What was kind of your first impression?
I knew well playing against, you know, the team for a while, but, they're very young, so I knew that coming in. So that was really about it, just coming in what I thought. I just knew it was a very young team. A lot of talented guys. I also knew a lot of guys were hurt, so I knew I had an opportunity here. Like when I first got here, talking to Joe on the phone, him telling me I'm going to have an opportunity, just be aggressive, be able to, you know, make the most of it. And, you know, like when your number is called, like, you know, when opportunity meets preparation, like, you know, I feel like I prepared for, you know, the opportunity I got here, and, you know, I was able to show what I can do.
What are your impressions of Scoot having, you know, seen his development kind of the second half of the season?
Man, Scoot, it's funny too, because even before the season, I was talking to guys, I think JB on the Celtics, about Scoot. Man, he's nice. He's really good. He has an NBA body. He was ready from, you know, the beginning. It just takes time in this league, man. Everyone wants you to, you know, come in day one and just be the top of the top. It takes time. Scoot's very talented, hardworking. So, you know, when you have those two things put together, you know, it's going to be scary. But, you know, Scoot, I feel like he ended off on a very, very high note. Not just for himself, but just to show people what he really can do. And we need that out of school. A lot of stuff on the stat sheet that we don't see, that we get from Scoot every night. His leadership, you know, he doesn't shy away from being our point guard. He doesn't care that he's a rookie. He talks, you know, he makes sure he's vocal. He makes sure he says the things he has to say, even if it's not wanted to be heard. So, you know, shout out to Scoot, man. He's a very young talent, and he's gonna have a great career.
When you were meeting with Joe and Chauncey today, did they give you any sense of kind of where they're leaning on the team option they have for you next year for your contract?
Even if I had an answer for that, I wouldn't really give that answer. I feel like that's behind closed doors for what they have going on. But no, I don't have an answer for that. But like I said, man, I'm very grateful for my time here. I can't express the gratitude I have towards this whole organization. So I'm sure they'll do what's best. But you know, I feel like just with that stays behind, and I guess you guys will figure that out when you guys do. Sorry.
You did enough to show that you deserve an opportunity here or somewhere else to have a larger role. Do you feel like you did enough here to show that you deserve a better opportunity or a larger role somewhere else or here than you had in Boston?
Definitely. Whether I just feel like any there's a lot of people in this league who are like, you know, were in my position who never got the opportunity to play, and then you know, when they do, they might get the chance to show what they can do. So I feel like that's kind of for everybody. But yeah, man, definitely. I feel like I kind of got to show what I can do. Definitely, you know, with more guys out, the leash gets a little longer. So, you know, I'm not thinking I'm gonna get to put up those shots every night on any roster, which I don't expect to. I don't want to. That's not really what I want to do. I want to be aggressive, you know, make plays for others, use what I can to get downhill, open the floor. And obviously if it's there for myself, take it and be aggressive. But yeah, I definitely know that. But yeah, definitely with a lot of guys out, you have a longer leash. So, you know, with all our guys back, you know, a lot of those shots drop. You know, finding ways to run to the corner, you know, get open cuts. So you just gotta be open to what the situation is, and you gotta know the situation, and you gotta just take full advantage of it. So I knew what I had here, and I was able to do that.
Have you gotten any sense of whether you're gonna be in the mix for a spot with the Canadian national team this summer?
No, not sure. Definitely something I want to do. You know, it's a dream come true for a lot of guys. Definitely getting the opportunity when it's, you know, a time like this is definitely something that a lot of players from Canada want to get the opportunity to do. So it's going to be a dogfight, man. We have a lot of guys who are very, very talented. I think Canadian basketball is big, growing a lot. I think this year was our most year having NBA players in the league. But yeah, I definitely want to get a chance at that. I feel like I'm going to have to fight for a spot, which is cool. You know, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be a dogfight, and yeah, it'll be fun.
There you go, Delano Ben at Exit Interviews. And since I'm already running long, going to end it right there. Thank you for joining me on this edition of The Briefcase. We'll be back later on this week to wrap up Exit Interviews with Chauncey Billups and Joe Cronin. Maybe check in on another mock draft as well. But until then, I am Casey Holdall. You've been listening to The Briefcase. Like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Go Blazers.